You're listening to Your Rivers Are Wrong, the podcast.
Good morning or evening or afternoon, whenever you may be. Welcome back to episode 45 of the Your Rivers Are Wrong podcast. And this is a very special episode. I should probably introduce ourselves.
You could, you know.
I'm skipping steps.
Fine.
Hi, my name is Dante. It is nice to meet you. I'm one of the hosts for today.
And I am the other host, and my name is Marilyn.
Wonderful. And today, we're bringing back a fan favorite that we tried once before to critical acclaim, and we're back at it again, and adding it to our regular scheduling. Every five episodes,
yeah,
we're going to do one of these.
That's great.
It is fan prompts. Fan prompts are world building prompts that you give to us. They are one sentence long. And what else do I need to say? And we answer them to the best of our abilities. We improv them on the spot. I don't know which ones Merla chose, and she doesn't know which ones I chose. So we're a little bit in the dark about what we're going to talk about today, but that's kind of the fun in it, right?
Yeah, that's right.
How has your week been? Have anything you want to update the people on before we jump into this?
Oof. Not too many updates, except for that tonight is the first night that I will be back in rehearsals for a theater production, which is super fun.
Sick.
For the new one, yes.
Awesome, awesome.
I think I auditioned in November or something, and it is currently like, is it February? No, it's almost February.
Almost February, yeah.
Yeah, so I had to wait for a bit, and now it's going to be rehearsal evening one, and I'm very excited.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, it's so fun.
That's so exciting. Do you know when the show is dropping? Like, when you guys are finally performing it? It's got to be months.
I think we're having
now, right?
Shows in October already, so.
Wow.
I mean, already. Not too already, but I think last time we did them in November, so we're a bit earlier now.
That's a full year affair. That's awesome.
Yeah,
cool.
And
cool.
I wanted to be.
That's true.
I want to do theater all the time.
Part of the fun is the process.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Yes, yes, yes.
So that's really fun. But aside from that, not too many crazy things. How about on your end of the ocean?
Well, I've started doing live streams of new tabletop RPGs, and I'm getting to collab with a bunch of people. It's crazy how many people are out there that don't. Once you stop playing D&D and start playing other things. Yeah, and it's wonderful. I'm having these interactive streams where people just tell me what to do or roll as I roll the dice, and it gets really
interesting.
That's
really good.
So,
yeah.
Off to a good start.
That sounds so great. Oh.
Speaking of good starts, no, I'm kidding.
I mean,
no, you're
please
good.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to know how the last one went. Which one did you play last?
Well, at the time of this recording, this is releasing a little bit into February, but time of this recording, we just did Raccoon Sky Pirates, where we pretend to be raccoons going through the neighborhood, stealing trash and escaping in their somehow functional flying trash ship. It's been a blast.
This makes me so happy. I just want this to be the prompt. But I guess someone already did it because there's literally a game now. So go watch the stream of Dante, you guys. He did it for you.
Yeah.
So fun.
That'll continue on, and so will this. Why don't we jump into our prompts?
Yeah.
Again, I have two prompts. Marla has two prompts. And we picked from a list of 50 prompts. There were over 50 prompts sent in by you guys, which is wild because we had just a little bit over a dozen for our first episode. So tougher competition today. But thank you so much for submitting. Again, you can find us at, you can find us here on whatever streaming platform you're listening to, as well as a small little YouTube that we started that we're uploading video VODs of these episodes, as well as a Twitter feed. All of these were from my YouTube channel, Wintry. Blank. I don't know. I'm going to change the name eventually, but I don't know what to.
You want to do like Wintry RPG or no?
I was thinking about that, but there's a thing about YouTube where my username has like a little snowflake at the end, which is like my little insignia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But since I made that name, YouTube has updated it that I can no longer have a symbol.
Aww.
If I update it.
But it's so great.
So I'm going to lose the snowflake if I change my name.
No.
But, you know.
Ooh,
so,
that's rough, buddy.
Yeah, it is. It's a conundrum.
Yeah, it is a conundrum.
Anyway, find us there. Do you want to go first or should I?
I can go first. Sure.
Does that mean I'm tossing it to you or are you tossing it to me?
Shall I start with the first prompt that I chose and then we can
yes,
just riff
perfect.
Off? Okay, let's do it.
Let's go from there.
Okay. Can I just first say there were so many good ones on
yes.
this one. The last one was already so great. And this one, I was like, I can't bear the fact that we can only do like four of them in this one.
Mm-hmm.
There were like so many great ones. And my brain couldn't wrap around any of them because they were so hard and interesting. So this is just like an excerpt of all the greatness that was out there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. The first one, I have to say, I might have been a little bit biased because of this person's username, because I found it so lovely. But here's your first prompt. It comes from Frog with Sunglasses. Thank you very much for your prompt, including a lovely picture, username picture of a frog with, in fact, sunglasses. Thank you very much for that
incredible
design choice. That was great. Mm-hmm. And the prompt is the following. Your king expects your nightmares and your queen your dreams.
Okay. I did see that. Mm. I did see that one.
And I remember reading it and then being like, I don't even know where to start with this one, right?
Kind of same. Yeah.
As you said, there were so many good prompts. I have, we were supposed to pick two and then pick two more as kind of our backups in case we overlapped.
Yeah.
I have nine here that I really liked and I couldn't choose. And Frog with Sunglasses was on that list. Wasn't on my, wasn't at the top, but certainly definitely caught my attention.
Yeah.
Thank you, Frog with Sunglasses. Your king expects your nightmares and your queen your dreams.
That's right.
Okay, well, let's start with a comfort zone. Let's start with a comfort zone. I'm going to go medieval fantasy on this, obviously.
Sure. We're warming up here.
Just a little bit. And what do you want me to build, like a setting, a story, like an excerpt? What are we looking at here?
I want to understand what this phrase means. That's what I want from you.
Your king expects your nightmares and your queen your dreams. I'm trying to figure out if this is like a parable. As in, like, it's metaphorical, or if it's truly, like, they are dream eaters.
I kind of love that, in a way. Also, I don't understand why, is the king the bad guy because he wants the nightmares, or is he the good guy because he takes the nightmares from other people, you know?
What this sounds like is that since this seems like such a one-sided relationship, right? I don't know if we're... I don't know if we're getting anything from them. No, I...
I know what you mean.
This is not the fault of Frog with Sunglasses is just speaking facts here.
He's speaking for the people.
The king expects your nightmares and your queen your dreams. I'm imagining that there's like a bishop or something who like tells this to the people, your king expects your nightmares and your queen your dreams.
Sure, yeah.
And the people just kind of got to know what that means. The king and queen, I would imagine, are some sort of enigmatic, right? They're not fully understood. There's kind of like a temporal existence, so to speak.
Okay, like there's a shroud of mystery going on?
Yeah, there's not like a tangible way to meet them. The only way you do is if you have these vivid dreams or nightmares. So we'll start with that as the foundation, right?
I like that a lot, yeah.
They're kind of this spectral sort of presence. Now, let's talk this out. Why would the king expect your nightmares? So he expects to receive them. What does he gain from them?
Or what does he learn from them about you?
Does the king care about me and my nightmares?
Maybe not. I don't know.
Like if I'm being chased by like 100 robotic sheep in my dream, right?
Is this what the king sounds like a personal addition to this?
Talk about that off podcast. Don't worry about it. Totally different conversation. Is that something that the king wants? Why would the king want that? Is it possible that these dreams have some sort of prophetic value in this setting?
Also interesting.
the dreams aren't so much prophetic as they are like a source of energy. Kind of like how Monsters, Inc. characters feed on fear.
So to speak, that's a good parable.
This is like sustenance. Like the king and the queen, because they're asking for two different things, they're not exactly working in tandem, maybe even in opposition. So like king of the south, queen of the north, so to speak.
Oh, okay. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. I think I'm cluing in on this. We're gonna paint the continent, right? A big old country separated into two monarchies. The king rules the southern half and the queen the north.
Okay.
The upper half. Now, the only way that these almost semi-divine beings establish their rulership is how much influence they have over the people. So basically, the more nightmares there are, the stronger the king is. And the more normal dreams there are, the stronger the queen is. Mm. There's a necessity that comes with that, that they have to influence the land to spawn or produce these nightmares and or good dreams. So you're going to see this sort of two-sided war occurring, where the queen is doing her best job to quell the people and make sure they have peaceful, relaxing lives, while the king's job is to spawn experiences within this country that lead to nightmares, something to fear, something to be afraid of. And, you know, for a classic medieval fantasy setting, the default state of the world would be the queen has the most control, right? The queen has made sure that the land exists in peace Many, many squires, many nobles, many bishops worship the queen.
Yeah, she's the people's favorite.
She's the people's champ, you know.
Yeah.
Land is peaceful. Everybody has good dreams. But the king, and apparently the king of nightmares, the nightmare king here, is slowly creeping up, affecting the southern lands, making sure that this land is desolate and dangerous. And simply the rumor of the king approaching northwards is enough to spawn nightmares. And the more people fear the idea of this king approaching, the more nightmares there are, the stronger the king gets, the more realistic his path grows in moving northwards. So there is this opposing dynamic between the king and queen in this country that determines the fate and the safety of the people. So in this setting, carefully and illustrated in beautiful words and brevity, Frogwood Sunglasses has provided, there is an everlasting war between these two forces. And you choose to side with which one you want and which one you're most comfortable with. Is there a deep and shadowy past between the king and queen? Are they named in dichotomy simply because of their stance in this war? Or is there something that goes farther beyond in the past?
Ooh.
Something to be uncovered, I'm sure.
Now, here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
If you are, I guess, ridded of your nightmare by the king, because this is his, how do we call it? His energy, his way of keeping alive in a way.
Yes, yes.
Does that mean you don't have the nightmare anymore? Does that mean the experience of the nightmare is not as frightening as it was or as it is, you know, in our world to have a nightmare? Mm-hmm. Or is it only afterward? Is it something that you hold in your head and then the king sort of collects afterward? If it's not, why would we not like the king? Because if he rids us of our nightmares, then, you know, I would want to have him in my life because then I would only be left with dreams.
Well, isn't that something? Because in this war, you'd imagine that the king of nightmares has to have some sort of following, right?
Mm.
Perhaps because the king feeds on nightmares, it rids people of the fear that they have of their nightmares, so to speak. To have somebody that has full mastery over it and to pledge fealty to somebody like that, you might not have to worry about these lingering terrors in your mind if there's a king that snatches it away from you for his own sustenance. It could be a protection thing. Whereas the queen feeds on your good dreams. And sometimes you want those good vibes to stay. But if she needs them and takes them to sustain herself, isn't that a little greedy? Isn't that a little strange? You know, who's really the bad guy in all of this?
Yeah, this is so complicated. It's really great.
I like that. I dig that. I think that's a good place to take that
and
hold on to.
I love how specific this got. This was really nice.
Yes. Thank you so much, Frogwood Sunglasses.
Thanks,
I really appreciate
Frogwood Sunglasses.
That.
I wouldn't say your username all the time.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay.
So good. Okay. Tossing it to you here.
Are we ready for the next prompt?
I'm not sure, but we're going to go for it anyway.
Okay. This one is for you.
Yes.
This, and I just wanted to see where your head goes with this. A lot of times I looked at a prompt and said, where would Marilla's head go?
This prompt. Do we want to know is the question. I guess we're doing it.
I truly do. This prompt comes from a commenter known as Svein. Thank you, Svein, for your amazing comment. And it goes as such. Here's your prompt, Marilla. Magic exists, but its use is limited to manipulating cheese.
Wait. Wow. Okay, hold up. Magic exists, but we can only magic cheese is basically what it says, right?
Its use is limited to manipulating cheese.
To manipulating cheese.
So truly, truly fully magical setting. Magical world here.
Okay.
But it's only in the context of cheese. What does that mean?
What does that mean?
What does that mean,
Spain?
I don't know.
Okay. Good God. So here's already my questions, right? Like, because cheese is pretty clear, but something becomes cheese, right? If you just lay, I don't know how cheese works, but you know, you start with milk and then you, I don't know, do a bunch of things and then you have cheese, right? And then you let it dry or whatever for a year and then you have cheese. I think
it's something to ask. How would I know this? There's no way I'd know this.
I mean, I should know because I'm super Dutch, but I mean, I also don't really know. I just know sort of the basic version. I think it's kind of like wine, right? Like the longer you age it, the better cheese it is and stuff.
Something like that, yeah.
But then also, if you haven't aged it at all, then is it cheese? Can we magic milk as well?
Magic milk.
When does it become, you know, that
I
can magic
that movie.
It? Where's the threshold here? And also, once we eat cheese, can we still manipulate it? Can we make it, I don't know, better cheese so that we're more full after or that we have a better taste experience? I don't know.
Yeah, okay,
so
wait,
specific.
Hold on. You have the power of Arcana in your palms and you want to use it to make cheese taste better? Is that
what I don't know. What else do you do with cheese? What do you do
magic,
with cheese?
Magic exists. Magic exists, Narella. And you're going to be like, hey, I'm going to eat this. Wait,
okay.
Wait, I need to repeat what you said.
I have the power to manipulate cheese. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to eat it first. And then when it's in my stomach, I'm going to make it taste better.
Yeah. Okay. So I did say that.
Those are your words.
Okay. I take my loss here. Let me expand my brain for a second.
Okay. I'm ready.
What is cheese, right? It's pretty hard. They're pretty big.
They don't have
I
to
love
be.
How we have to define this now. Yeah, you made me do this. Will just everything be made of cheese in this world because it's the easiest thing to manipulate, right? We can build houses from cheese. Sure.
Sure.
We can, I don't know, what else can you do with cheese? I don't fucking know.
This is your...
There will be like skin products based off cheese instead of, you know, aloe vera or something because it's so,
so
easy to manipulate. God, what do you do with cheese? Okay.
I don't know. How many different kinds of cheese are there in your...
Okay, I feel like I know where I want to go because this is the most interesting part for me. The rest is all like chaos land.
I'm ready.
Okay. What I like about this is that cheese gets stronger. Bear with me here. Cheese gets stronger the longer it ages. So I want to say your magic basically becomes stronger. Let me think. Or it's probably harder to manipulate older cheese because it's stronger.
Interesting. Do you think your magic amplifies the older the cheese is?
Yeah, that's. I kind of want to do it the other way because that's interesting, right? If you use a super like 60-year-old cheese for your magic, but then it's more of a source, right? What did the prompt say? Magic only works on cheese, kind of.
Magic exists, but its use is limited to manipulating cheese.
Manipulating cheese. Okay, I feel like I want to bend the prompt here a little bit.
We're
the hosts. We can do this. We have powers.
That's totally up.
I want to say, rather than magic can only be used on cheese, I want to say the only thing that fuels magic is cheese. So based on how old the cheese is that you use for your fuel of magic, for your spell components, basically,
of course,
the stronger your magic gets. So what we will have here is suddenly every cheesemaker in the world will have a run for their cheeses. Maybe this is a sudden thing. I'm not sure. Maybe this is how the world always worked. I don't know.
Sure.
Cheese, at least, is becoming a very, you know, important source material. And based on how old your cheese is, so the longer you wait for your cheese to ripen, I guess, the stronger the magic will come out of it. So if you have a spell that's the most important thing that you've ever worked on in your life, you know, there's a wizard in a tower far away that only works on this one masterpiece spell crafting that he's doing. He's making a spell to stop time or whatever. I don't know. The only thing he needs is a cheese older than 100 years. But perhaps he won't live for 100 years. You know, there's a thing going on here. So either you use the oldest cheese you can find or, you know, buy up all the old cheese if you have that power, money power.
Right.
Wealth power in you. Or you have to literally buy a regular cheese and then wait years and years to use this power. There's another weird thing here. Can you get stronger if you don't use it? Will you improve your I don't know, your magic skills by using, you know, boring cheese, by using young cheese, regular cheese?
Young cheese.
Or will that not really be equal? Can you practice it on regular cheese?
I imagine.
If you actually have to do it with the strong cheese?
Yeah, so I imagine that, like, you, when you're a beginner, an apprentice wizard, a cheese whiz.
Mage.
a cheese whiz.
Cheese whiz. Yeah.
If you're a young cheese whiz, right, and you practice with this young cheese, this is what our podcast has become. I see it on your face.
What if it's like Pokemon that you like really get attached to this one cheese and then you grow older and the cheese grows older and you get stronger?
Oh, so you're talking like lifelong partnerships with a certain piece of cheese?
I don't know. I hate it. Let's not go there.
Okay. Yeah, I'm assuming you learn with that. But like if you want to cast the most powerful spells or you want to do the most powerful thing, you have to find old cheese to channel it through, right? They work as like conduits and age is power, so to speak. Age amplifies. Now, I looked it up while you were talking because I had the time.
How cheese worked? Great.
The archaeological evidence for making cheese in Egypt goes back about 5,000 years.
Wow.
The oldest known cheese discovered is around 3,200 years old. So the clear lead up of this world that has cheese manipulation, cheese arcana, if you will, is when this ancient piece of cheese is discovered. And you have to make sure it doesn't fall into the hands of more villainous cheese wizards, you know, cheese wizards.
Yeah. Those famous cheese wizards.
Super old cheese locked up in maximum security government facilities.
This is like a toxic waste thing almost, right? Where no one can get to it and it will just be there for hundreds of years. And then in 100 years, some druid that's still alive will open it and be like, at last.
Yeah.
At last, my collection is complete.
And our young protagonist is someone visiting their grandpa in Italy. And visiting his old farm guy? And he's like, oh, my ancestors used to make cheese, you know, and you know, you go back into the old barn and you find this really weird musty stack of something.
And then suddenly our protagonist has access to the most rare and strongest cheese of all, the one to rule them all.
This is where I would put the name of a cheese if I was any sort of cheese connoisseur, but I'm not. So, Svein, thanks for the prompt.
Wow.
Thanks for the prompt, Svein.
Did we answer it? I'm not sure.
No, I think we
sure
did.
Went into a strange forest of ideas.
I think we thoroughly answered it.
Which is, I guess, the point of a prompt. So, there you go. We succeeded.
All right. That's mine. Thank you for the prompt, Svein.
Wow. Oh, God.
All right. Your turn to bring up a prompt.
Yep. I got another one. I'm heavily doubting between the two I got left.
Yeah.
But I think I like this one more because the sentence is just so funky to me.
Mm-hmm.
This one is from the user called Lorekeeper. Thank you very much, Lorekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
And the prompt is as follows. Store closes at moonlight.
Store closes at moonlight. Did I pick that one? Did I see that one too?
I don't know.
Oh, I did. That's it right there. Lorekeeper. Store closes at moonlight.
I love this just as a sentence.
It's very strong. Yeah. That could be the name of a book. Be the tagline.
This could be the starting sentence of a book, of a dialogue that we don't understand yet.
All right. Now, I'm going to offer you two branches, and we're going to pick a direction here.
Okay.
One is the store closing at moonlight because it's dangerous outside at moonlight. Or is it two, the store closes at moonlight because the store becomes something at moonlight?
Oh, so it can't be a store anymore.
So, or its employees become something at moonlight. You know, I'm thinking.
I like the latter part because I'm more confused by it.
One leans more towards like night survival. The other leads toward like magical mystery, right?
I feel like we've seen the one where outside gets scary, so the store closes.
Yeah.
I feel like that's sort of your The Last of Us zombie apocalypse kind of version of this.
Right.
Or, you know, your werewolves are there in moonlight, so we can't get out or whatever. Which is interesting, but, you know, we know that storyline, kind of. We know where that would go. Mm-hmm. So let's do the other one.
Okay. So I'm imagining, like, Midwest suburbia, a little old shop. Middle of nowhere, surrounded by trees, forests, what have you. People stop by from like
surrounding. Is this like a general store? What is this?
Yeah, it's like a general store, like a just a regular old odds and ends kind of shop.
Sure.
On the edge of town, so there's not too many people nearby, so to speak. You kind of go out there because they're the only ones who supply very specific, unique things. Like, hey, I'm looking for this one hook that will go on this one door and only fits this one little hole. Do you have that? Of course they have it, you know. They're that general store, but otherwise they don't really have competition nearby, right? There's no neighboring stores here. So the front of the shop faces towards the town as it does. You got the lights and you got the nice banner. I need a name for this, but we can brainstorm that later when we get more ideas. But
yeah,
at moonlight, shop closes, pull down the blinds on the windows. They close up the front of the shop. The lights never really turn off. And on this store, the back door opens. Open to denizens of the forest.
Okay.
Let's take it from there, right? Let's take it from
there. Okay.
This shop serves a different purpose once the sun goes down. And it has a different clientele after the sun goes down. Specifically, the ones away from the town. So it's kind of a two-sided store.
Mm-hmm.
So what's walking in here? So what's the...
Okay. So in my brain, immediately this was like... a sort of Ghibli parade of strange spirits and creatures. You know what I mean? The sort of Bambi version of like Disney animals, but then with weird forest spirits. And
Yes.
Was that accurate?
Yeah, I was going for kind of a Miyazaki vibe in terms what arrives at the store.
Perfect match.
You know what? My guess is that when this store closes at moonlight and the door opens on the other side, creatures that walk into the store are welcomed by a much larger establishment. Once you enter through the doorways, the store becomes like expansively big. you know.
Oh, I thought for a second you meant like a perspective thing that all the spirits and animals are really small. So the store is like this huge undertaking that you go to. You know, it's like this pilgrims march to what the store.
Yeah.
Because it's just human size. But I like both versions.
Yeah, I dig that. But I don't want to go too intense on this. I'm feeling like a nice, sprightly vibe.
Sure.
So my energy when I think that the store closes at moonlight to welcome in all of these fae creatures is that the store kind of just serves as like a rec center. Just like a...
Yeah. Aw, yeah. Just like a spirit rec center.
Just like a place for them to hang out. Like maybe there's a little bit of like night school going on in the corner. Maybe there's some like basketball for the fae friends. It's like a little bit of gymnasium to hold like birthday parties and stuff. It's like the community center of the forest. And they have all the funding of this, of course, comes from the odds and ends that they sell in the morning. But at night, they put everything in the store to use so that this can be a place that people can just bond. And this is where like stories like The Breakfast Club happens. This is where like people, hang out and have a great time. Hey, it's Merry Winter's birthday today. Let's hang up some will-o-wisps. You know, let's get the specter from the East Lake. I hear he's great at magic tricks. Can we bring him in? You know, hire him for the night.
Yes.
Things like that. I'm feeling it's just a wholesome vibe. And if you want to spin it off into a story, I mean, you can make the shopkeepers part fae, that they have to kind of balance these two lives and make sure they don't never interact with each other. We can have
don't they interact with each other? Here's a little bit of the world building still.
Sure. I mean, the classic example would be...
Why can't we be like friends with the weird fae spirits that walk in at night? Are they invisible? Is this like a separate, you know, reality that's going on in the same sort of physical place, I guess?
Well, it's probably existing in a world that's not quite aware of magic, but still has the mythos of mythical creatures, you know? Hey, watch out for the spirits in the forest. They'll lead you in Trixia and steal your stuff. You know, don't interact with them sort of world, right? But I imagine that there would be... like, you know, a couple of grade schoolers or middle schoolers who would come up to the shop to buy something, maybe buy a bar of candy or chocolate or something like that. And they're like, hey, mister, I see that weird instrument on your wall. Do you have somebody who teaches that? And then the shopkeeper would be like, well, come past moonlight.
If you really want to. Yeah.
Come past moonlight. I got a couple people who could teach you that, you know. So the shopkeeper would be the person to be like, hey, this person is pretty chill. Maybe they can meet the fae, you know.
Oh, I love that.
And they'd stop by, go to night school.
It's a sort of gatekeeping.
Hang out.
But in a cute way.
Yeah, I think they're being protective and stuff.
Yeah. So why is it moonlight then?
Why is it moonlight?
Is it specifically, you know, if literally the moon is covered by clouds, is it then still the case? Is it like a sort of a general fantasy, you know, sentence requirement for the store to sort of switch? or is it literally the fact that it's bathed in moonlight will create the transition or something?
My guess is that the fae creatures can only be seen in moonlight. Otherwise, they're entirely invisible.
Okay.
So like once the moonlight comes in, you kind of open up those blinders on the top of on the rooftop of the shop and the moonlight can come in. And all the fae creatures can see each other and hang out.
That's pretty good.
They'll have that cool silvery glow around them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I see. So what is this shop called?
Something like by moonlight, but that's too obvious, maybe.
I'm thinking like something daylight, just so nobody...
Daylight?
Everybody knows it closes at...
Oh, yeah, like the other way. Yeah. Regular by daylight. General store by daylight.
It's just like a Sailor Moon interest. Fighting evil by moonlight.
Yep, exactly.
I'm like maybe like Sunrise Super Shop.
something
like that.
Sunrise Market.
Sunrise Market has to be like a real place, I'm sure.
It feels like it, right? It has a good ring to it.
Sunrise Market. I dig that. And then, you know, the dichotomy of the moonlight services.
Moonlight Rec Center. Rec center. I love that these spirits need like they just need a place to hang.
Yeah.
That's all this is. Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe this was also like the curse of the store owner, right? Because they also want to exist in the human world. Perhaps that choice that they made to go live here and be like a regular storekeeper had sort of the result that they couldn't see their fae friends anymore except for in moonlight.
Mm.
Maybe they were part of the fae once and then fell in love with the human world. And then they had to make like a sort of decision about it.
Yeah. And so had to keep up their side of their support of the fae community. So this is the compromise. It's a shop on the edge of town. A wonderful way to go with this one. That was so good. Yep. I'm so glad you chose that one.
Thank you so much, Lorekeeper. This was so fun. I just love the casualness of this sentence so much.
Oh, yes.
It's like somebody says, yeah, sorry.
Store closes in moonlight.
Yeah.
So good.
It's great.
If we somehow chose the same two prompts, the store closes in moonlight was my fourth one. So.
Okay. Yeah. We would have gone like a few hours in to make that work.
Before I step into this last prompt, unfortunately, I do want to say my runner up.
Please do. There were so many good ones. We can just shout them out if we want.
I was going to pick, because this is, I believe, coming out the week of Valentine's Day, I wanted to do the Love is Illegal one. Love is Illegal would have been very fun. There's so many different directions you can
go. Was that the only prompt? Love is Illegal?
Love is Illegal.
Was that the whole thing?
That's the whole thing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty good.
And the runner up right beneath that was The Gods Trade Souls Like Coin. Which was sick.
Oh, I saw that one too. I really love that one too. Yeah.
That was by Hell Penguin. Hell Penguin was in chat last night. That's awesome.
Hi, Hell Penguin.
Thank you. Shout out to Hell Penguin for almost making the cut for this episode. I apologize.
That's a stupid shout out, but still great.
Thank you. Appreciate you. But this is the one that I had to choose because it spoke to me. And I think there's a lot we can do with this.
That's all you need. Yep.
The final prompt of the episode is from Fighting Falcon 777. Thank you for the prompt, Fighting Falcon 777. The prompt is for you to kick off. The dragon has been missing for nearly a month.
Oh. Ooh. This one's also somehow pretty casual.
Yeah, where could it be?
So there's just a dragon hanging around, you know?
Known dragon.
The dragon has been missing for almost a month, right?
Nearly a month, yeah.
Nearly a month. Okay. Ooh, I kind of want to go casual with this too, but maybe it should be a bit more stakes. Hold on.
Is he also at the rec center? Is he also-
I mean, you know, I could see him hanging in there. Yeah, kind of. He'll be a little bit like big for the place perhaps, but maybe they'll just bring him his tea outside, you know? Okay, let me think. My brain cogs are moving.
I can see him. Oh, they're spinning quick.
Okay, they're spinning. Here's the start of this. I want to say this is also a town or a village that's quite small and a bit rather in a sort of remote area, right? So there's a bunch of forests and a bunch of oceans on the other side. It takes a good long while before you get to another place. So this is quite a secluded community. So I want to say the people that live here have been living here their whole lives. They've made, you know, families here. They've died here. They know this place through and through. This is a tight community. At some point, one of the younger kids, perhaps the, you know, the butcher's daughter or something, she's like 8 or 9. She's just wandering around town, just playing outside as she normally does. Usually she does it with the other kids, but there's not a lot of them around, or, you know, they're doing something else. I don't know. So she's just kind of wandering a little bit, just sort of entertaining herself. And at some point, she just ends up at the lookout spot that you usually go, where you can have a little picnic and just look out over the ocean or something. She knows, in fact, because she has done some good wandering and exploration around town. So she knows that if you pass by the fence that's a little bit loose on one side, you can very easily, almost in a sort of goat trail or something, you can kind of go down the mountain and go all the way down to where the sea hits the cliffs, basically. And you can have a lovely little secret hideout there if you want to. And if you don't tell all the other kids that that's a thing, which she didn't, not yet,
of course.
She almost wanted to. So she does that. She takes the little trail and she just sits and, you know, throws some stones in the water, just has a good time. And suddenly she hears this sort of snore. This kind of very deep rumbling almost behind her. She's super shocked and she looks over her shoulder and she can't see anything except for just like the caves, the sort of little rock formations that are there just, you know, going into the mountain. And then she looks over and she hears it again. And she kind of wants to, because she's 9, she's not scared yet.
not yet.
She kind of wanders over and tries to climb inside and see where the sound comes from. And she's just super curious and she thinks, oh man, if the other kids are going to hear this, you know, I will be the girl of town. I will be so famous for whatever I'm discovering here. And in fact, once she turns a corner and climbs past all these sort of protruding rocks and shit, she actually sees a sort of glistening purple shape that she's looking right at. It's almost like water, but not quite. And at first she thinks, is this a sort of weird moss or a weird sort of plant that I'm looking at, because she's just looking at a very big sort of wall almost of this texture. And then she sees it move and she sees a little ruffle of a wing somewhere. And then she's like, okay, okay, shit. Okay. This is not good. This is okay. This is pretty big. This is like a very big, big snoring animal. Big snoring animal here. Out of shock or out of fear, she stumbles and she makes a little bit of noise. And then suddenly the, which we now know, is the dragon just hangs out in this cliff somehow, moves and hears her noise and then turns his giant head and says, what are you doing here? You can... I don't know. I'm dragon star. I'm so bad at this.
Just like that.
Apparently like this. Yeah, this dragon is a sort of nice old man. And he's like, well, hang on a second. Why are you afraid of me? I was just sleeping. You woke me up. And she's like, oh God, do I answer this now? Oh my God, what if he eats me or breathes fire in my face and then my face gets burnt? And she's like, oh, well, you know, I just thought I'd left to sleep and I'll just go back to where I come from and never come back. And he's like, well, don't do that. I'm really lonely, actually.
Oh.
She's like, well, I guess I'm a little bit lonely, too. Aww. Like, I can bond over that if you want. And then before you know it, they have a lovely bonding moment. This is the first meeting, right? I'm going to skip a little bit.
Of course.
But it was important for setting the scene. Our dragon, I'm not sure if he has a name, maybe just Dragon. I also like if she just calls him Dragon, because that's like, sure. This is the only thing she ever knows. Like, she's never seen a dragon in their life. This is just the dragon, right? The one dragon that exists in the world. They're slowly becoming buddies, and she's thinking, I don't really want to share it with anyone that he's here. But then, of course, at some point, like a nosy kid follows her along the trail, and they see the dragon, and okay, so this becomes kind of the kid's secret of the town, right? All the parents are like, yeah, they talked about dragons. I think they have a new game or something. Yeah. They're very imaginative, you know? They're very talented at this.
I think
they're going to become like great storytellers in the future. And then there's like an actual fucking dragon in the cliff just hanging out and, you know, playing tea parties with the kids. Or hide and seek, which he's very bad at because, you know, he can't really get outside this cliff.
Gigantic.
Yeah. I want to say at some point, you know, half a year into the relationship here, this is their big, big guarded secret. Their most prominent treasure of the town. Nobody knows about it except for the kids that hang out at the cliff. One day, when our little protagonist girl, Butcher's daughter, comes down to say hello to her dragon friend, there's nothing to be seen. The cliff is empty. The place where the dragon always is, because he can't really get out, she thought at least, is just empty. It's just an empty slab of rock. And she's like, what the hell? Did something happen? Did he... die? Well, even if he died, then he must still be here, right? Did he just magic away? Is that a thing he can do? Why didn't he tell me? So suddenly the dragon's gone and the other kids are asking, where did the dragon go? Did he fly out or something? And she was like, I don't think so, because he never moves. Like, he's so big. I don't think he can like get out of this small cove that I found him in. And no one knows what happened to the dragon. And, you know, a week passes by and a month, almost a month,
almost a month.
I should say. Yeah. And she gets really sad about it. And she's like, I really miss my dragon friend. What happened to the dragon? And then at some point, I think to wrap this up, she can't really hold it in. And she's like, okay, no, change of plans. I think at some point,
I'm listening.
They wind up all the courage to go tell their parents that the dragon was actually real and that he's missing now. And they bring the parents to the cliff. And the parents are like, oh, this is very serious. And then, you know, in the evening when the kids are asleep again, they're like, okay, so maybe we should like, get them to school then, because they're really like getting invested into this dragon story now. I think they need something to take their mind off, you know. Time passes by and I don't know if we ever get to know what happens to this dragon.
What? Oh my gosh.
What do you think, Dante?
I
kind of want this to be the mystery that only some kids knew about, and that because it is like a children's story or a so-called imaginative something, I feel like it can get lost to the ages, you know, and no one really knows it was an actual real dragon. And even the kids that, you know, start to grow up, they're not really sure if it was a real dragon.
Oh my gosh. Is this like an allegory to imaginary friends when you're young that slowly like are forgotten?
Well, it was a real
older?
Dragon, only no one really can prove it anymore.
It was a real dragon.
I know it was a real dragon.
You know, do you?
Yeah.
Do you know it was a real dragon?
Perhaps, you know. Okay, this can be like some Peter Pan shit. Where, like, Wendy grows old and is never sure if this was ever real, and then she makes a little tiny Wendy, and then the tiny Wendy finds the path down the cliff, and she's like, oh, this is really nice, I can have a little hideout now. And then she hears the snoring of some large creature, and she passes by, and then she sees a dragon sleeping in the cliffs. Perhaps it's a sort of magic Fata Morgana kind of thing. I don't know.
Okay. Now I'm going to be thinking about that for the rest of the day. What happened?
Does that satisfy you?
Marla.
Probably not at all.
Probably not. But it did answer the prompt. Dragon has in fact been missing.
And perhaps we'll never show up again. It has, in fact. Spooky. Wild. Okay.
Spooky and wild.
Wookie. So how do you put that together?
No, I hate it. Okay. Wookie prompt.
What a
thanks,
Wookie.
Falcon. I forgot the rest of your name. Falcon 777.
Fighting Falcon 777.
Fighting Falcon. There we go.
Well, that was a pretty fantastic time. Thank you guys for sending in your prompts. Again, yeah, there were over so 50 of them, and that blows my mind. So we can only
I
get
wish
to so
we
many.
Could answer all of them. Yeah.
One day, if we ever like do a live stream, then we can get everybody on board and just answer prompts from chat.
But that sounds good. Yeah, we should do that.
Plans for the future. But thank you for listening. We have another episode coming out next week as we do. Are you like leaning against something? Are you?
Just, oh, yeah. Sorry. This is weird. Sorry, yeah, there's this like there's the stairs of my platform bed here. So I'm like,
there's no. Yeah, but I can't tell
you because it looks out of frame. Yeah.
You look like you're just waving to somebody out the window. No, you're good.
Waving forever. Yeah.
Again, on an audio podcast, they cannot see this, but it's funny to me.
Yeah, the framing was a bit weird. Sorry.
That's okay. No, you're good. thanks for listening, guys. And as you continue to tackle prompts and build worlds from the infinite columns of your imagination, always, always remember this one simple thing. Your rivers are wrong.
Yep. They're pretty wrong.
See you next
Sorry
week.
Sorry about that.
Sorry, no need to apologize.
Oh, they get to apologize for
their
wrong.
What if they're wrong for a reason? It's fine.
What did I do?
Listen, we'll figure that out. Maybe next episode.
Next episode.
Who knows? Goodbye. See ya. Bye.
See ya. Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Rivers Are Wrong. If you have ideas for topics, prompts, or you just want to share your thoughts, please reach us at yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. That's yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. Also, a big thanks to Maarten Schellekens, who created the intro and outro music for our podcast. And most importantly, thank you for listening. We hope to see you at the next one. Bye.